You're listening to the Star Wars Report, Episode 17, Ask the Authors. Hello everyone, welcome back. Welcome back to the Star Wars Report. I'm your host, Riley Blanton, riding solo this week, actually. Bringing you, kind of single tier, bringing you the last of our coverage of Dragon Con 2011. Actually, it's kind of been extended, a lot of Dragon Con coverage, but we've gotten some great feedback from you guys, and it seems like you guys have really enjoyed it, and we certainly did. So this is going to be one panel from Dragon Con 2011. I was actually planning on doing a few more, but this is really the best when it comes to an example of a panel at Dragon Con. So this is what I decided to air on this episode. It's the Ask the Authors panel from Dragon Con. Ask the Authors, let's see, let me pull up, I'm going to cheat here, pull up my Dragon Con app. All right, here we go. Just to list off the authors that were on this one Q&A panel. Walter John Williams, Timothy Zahn, Michael Stackpole, A.C. Crispin, Aaron Alston, Rebecca Mosta, or Moista, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and Kevin J. Anderson. So quite the lineup of talent for this particular episode, and I really do think this one turned out very well. Just because of the chemistry between the authors. It really created a really fun atmosphere. And if you stick around, about halfway through, you'll hear me ask a question. Something I've talked about on air here a few times, but I actually got to ask it to the authors themselves. So stick around, that's coming up. And like I say, I was thinking about some other panels, but often it's difficult to get a decent quality recording because if you're not seated in a very good location, it's just difficult for our poor microphone to try to pick up the what the speaker's saying clearly. So we've got a little bit of stuff, but I think we'll have to put it in the archives and maybe bring it out for a surprise or two sometime. I haven't quite decided what we'll do with the Smallville panel and the Battlestar Galactica panels, that et cetera, et cetera. But that's okay because this one is indeed awesome. I think this is my favorite when it comes to all the panels. And I didn't think it would be. But we'll get to that in just a second. But before we do, I would like to say and make sure everyone knows that we are going to Fan Days. As a matter of fact, organizing a meetup for Fan Days. How awesome is that? It's a little bit informal. We don't really have like a huge website page for it or anything. But if you're a listener and you know that you will be at Fan Days, shoot us an email. We'll be meeting Friday night at the Holiday Inn Express Hotel. It's the official hotel of the convention. We'll be meeting up with some other podcasters and people from the fan community that we've already emailed and talked to. I know Chris Smith and Matt from the Sarlacc Pit podcast will be there, as well as hopefully maybe Mark from Jedi News. It's all just kind of up in the air a little bit, which is why we're doing a little bit informally. But hey, if you're interested, shoot us an email, starwarsreport@gmail.com, and let us know, and we could do the meetup. We're going to meet at the hotel and then pick a restaurant and go out to eat and meet some fans who are going to be attending the convention that weekend. And it is shaping up to be quite an awesome convention. It's a little bit smaller scale than something like Dragon Con, but I do think that could be a very good thing, and maybe it won't be quite as hectic. And that and the fact that it's 2 days instead of like 5 days, which is what Dragon Con ended up being. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be hanging out at Stephen Stanton's table a little bit, so if you see us, you're more than welcome to. You'll see myself and my sister hanging out there. We'll be going to the Hughes of the Force screening. We'll be doing interviews from the convention floor, hopefully talking to a couple of celebrities who are there as well. And so, yeah, I think that's going to turn out to be a great experience. And yes, if you are on the fence and you are in the greater Texas area and you possibly can make it, you should. I've heard some really good things about Fan Days from many people. So I'm very much looking forward to a little bit more of an intimate convention, as people say. All right, and without further ado, we're going to go ahead and jump straight into the Ask the Authors. And this is them introducing themselves on stage. And I think I've lost the first couple seconds of it, but yeah, you'll get the gist as you listen to it. Here it is.
Kevin and I wrote the all of the Young Jedi Knights books. There were 14 of them, and we outlined the Junior Jedi Knights series, and I read three of those.
And I'm Kevin J. Anderson. I wrote the Jedi Academy books, Darksaber. I edited the three anthologies, the Cantina, Bounty Hunters, and Jabba's Palace. Did a whole bunch of the Tales of the Jedi comics. I did the, with Rebecca and I, we did the Jabba's Palace pop-up book. What else? Stories and other stuff.
I'm Aaron Alston. I've written a dozen Star Wars novels so far, and I'm working on my 13th, which is Race Squadron and Mercy Kill. With Conviction, which is in the Fate of the Jedi series.
And just imitating Aaron here, I'm Mike Stackpole. I wrote I, Jedi. I started the X-Men series.
I'm Walter John Williams. I wrote Destiny's Way, which has been described as the best Star Wars book ever written by somebody who only wrote one Star Wars book. I heartily recommend to you my other 30 works of fiction, which are also available mostly.
Timothy Zahn, I've written a few Star Wars books too.
Hello, I was just wondering, when you guys are co-authoring or writing on a series of books like the Yuuzhan Vong or Fated Jedi or whatever, how much knowledge do you have of the other people's writings? Do you write at the same time, or do you all get into a room and say, hey, I really want to kill that a-hole Chewbacca, I want to do that, and you guys just say, okay, here you go.
Well, most recently, it's actually a fairly complicated process. What you do is an idea for a series will come up at Lucasfilm and or Del Rey. They'll bounce it back and forth. They'll decide they want to go with it. They'll solicit the writers they want to work on the series and ask for more ideas. And then a couple months later, we all fly into California to the Presidio and have a story conference. It'll be the writers who will be participating, editors, representatives of Lucasfilm, and some of the archive brains like Jim Lucino, who knows everything. Then we hammer out an arc for the entire series and then slice it into pieces, however many pieces will be the number of novels in the last couple of cases, 9, and distribute those pieces among the writers who will be participating. So then everybody goes home, and the first 3 novels get outlined. I do one outline, Karen Travis does one outline, Troy Digg does one outline, and send them in for approval, and once we get the approval, we begin writing a staggered formation. Whoever's the first novel will begin writing a couple months ahead of the next. We are in constant communication by email. Some days I will receive 30, 40 pieces of email from my colleagues and Del Rey and Lucasfilm. And so, yeah, we're really, really well acquainted with what one another is doing and are as coordinated as possible to be. That's the way it is currently. Of course, different series require different kinds of coordination, like the New Jedi Order, which Mike was part of the beginning of, and the Young Jedi Knights had different methodology.
Sounds pretty imperially regimented to me.
No, it's not that.
And just for your information, nobody ever said, I want to kill that a-hole Chewie. That came from Lucasfilm.
Oh, it was all R.A. Salvatore. You could send him to the
That was not Bob's fault. I was there for those meetings, and someone can buy me a drink later, and I'll tell that story. But
well, but also one of the conferences that I had way early on when Lucasfilm realized that somebody had to go, I made this big pitch that the really truly useless character is Lando. You need to kill off Lando, and they thought great. And then they all came back and said, oh wait, he's our only African American character.
Yes.
So let's kill the Wookiee instead. And?
Oh. Sorry. I just hiked over from the Westin after the Buccaneers panel. I'm Ann Crispin. I write as A.C. Crispin. I wrote the Han Solo trilogy. And I did for Jack Sparrow what I did for Han Solo, The Price of Freedom. It's sold out here, but you can get it in Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and Amazon, and also electronically. Thank you. No.
Okay, I actually have a character question. I was wondering who your favorite characters are and why, whether it's a character you created or one from the original core universe that was created by Lucas and the movies.
Let's start with Anne because she's out of breath.
You better watch it. I'm wearing a cutlass.
But she's too out of breath to use it.
Not actually.
Telling the blind guy to watch it is not politically correct.
Okay, I would have to say that my favorite character that I wrote about, first of all, for George Lucas's characters was obviously Han Solo. I really didn't have all that much interest in the Jedi and the Force. Still don't. But I would love to write about Han again. And I was also, you know, interested in Princess Leia to a great deal, a great extent. I wondered, like crazy, why a woman from a planet with no weapons was a dead shot. I mean, you know, how come? She hit what she aimed at, unlike the Imperial Stormtroopers. And let's see, and my favorite character that I created was probably Murg, the big feline guy that palled around with Han before Chewie came around.
I guess my favorite character that we created was Tenelka. I just liked the fact that she was so strong and self-sufficient. She was exactly what I wanted to be, and she was also a person from two worlds who had a lot of inner conflicts and dealt with them in interesting ways.
So of the 54 projects that I did for Lucasfilm, some of my very favorite stuff that I did was the Tales of the Jedi comics.
Yes.
And I think my favorite character was Ulik Keldroma, because I was with him for 30 issues, and we basically took him from a cocky good guy to a really bad guy to his redemption. And I was with Chris Gossett, the artist, while we were writing the last issues of the redemption. And just sitting across the table from him, like, we were really, really emotionally involved in this. And Chris was drawing his panels as tears were pouring down his face. And I thought, well, we must have done something right. So. Not because he was so mad at me. That's not why he was crying.
Of the original movie characters, I would have a hard time deciding between Han Solo and Wedge Antilles. They're very, very different characters. They offer you many, many different kinds of opportunities as a writer, and you just love them both to death. Of my original characters, probably Face Loran. We will be seeing them.
I'd have to agree with Aaron in terms of the movie characters, both Wedge and Han. You got to love the guys who aren't using the Force. Of the characters that I created, I love Korn to death, but the one I'm most proud of is Baron Fell.
Let's see, of the movie characters, Han Solo, because he's the one who isn't solemn all the time. And he's the one who doesn't spend his time discussing philosophy. You know, is actually out in the world doing interesting stuff and being sarcastic. And I gotta like that. I'm not sure I actually created any characters in Destiny. So I mean, Lord knows there are enough of them. I mean, I have to say the one that surprised me and that I had a lot of fun writing was Kiff Duren.
Yes.
Because I got to have him grow up a bit, and that was an interesting process.
I'm going to cheat and call a tie between Han and Luke, because Han is fun to write, but Luke gives you the chance to explore what are the boundaries and uses of power. And that is something that everybody has a certain amount of power, and how you use it is a basic question. What path do I go down? What do I actually use this for? What are the things I should not use it for? Han doesn't have nearly that much ethical questions, because he hasn't got that many ethics. My own characters, again, toss up Mara Jade and Grand Admiral Thrawn.
My question's for Kevin. First of all, thank you for what you've done for Dune. And second of all, what was it like writing the villain Exar Kun in Jedi Academy, then going back in the comics to explore him. Was there anything that you wanted to get into that you couldn't because of the short medium? And will we ever be seeing any mention of him again?
Well, actually, the way we wrote the things, it wasn't writing one and then going back and doing another, because as I was outlining the Jedi Academy books, I was working on the comics with Tom Veitch, and I got into it because Dark Horse Comics asked me to write an introduction to Dark Empire, which I had never read, so I read it, and I got to know Tom Veitch from it, and it turned out he was just then starting this neat series called Tales of the Jedi, this old-fashioned Star Wars that was a couple of thousand years before the movies. And it was just starting to be defined. And I said, well, that's kind of cool, because I have a long-dead Dark Lord of the Sith who was some random number of thousand years before the movies. How about if my guy is in your comics and we just develop the backstory while I'm writing the front story? Because as a writer, you're supposed to develop the backstory anyway. And I just loved working on both at the same time, and there's stuff that you can do in the comics that I think are more effective than what you could do in the novel. There's a scene at the very end when Exar Kun gets basically locked and sealed inside the Sith Temple. It's just a whole bunch of black panels that it's just, let me out of here, let me out of here. And it's more effective to look at these black panels than it is for me to describe in paragraphs of prose that he was stuck and it was dark and he couldn't go anywhere. So I'd like doing them both at the same time.
Tim, did you enjoy writing in the expanded universe earlier on when you got into Star Wars before it got as popular, before a lot of other people started doing it, or do you enjoy it more now that you have a lot of other stories to work with in the same universe? There's a lot more.
It's a lot harder to write now because so many things have been done. When I first started with the Thrawn trilogy, it was kind of an open field, and I could dig anywhere and find a wonderful story. Now, a lot of digging has been done. There are prairie dog holes all over the place. You've got to be careful I don't walk into. In fact, we did spend about 2 hours yesterday discussing the next project while our son Corwin and Anna are on their computers looking up Wikipedia. Okay, has this been done? Has this been allowed? What's the time frame on this? You know, when does this happen? When does this happen? Okay, we got conflicting stories here between two different books. We'll have to check with Leland and find out what the official one is. So it's a lot harder to write now. On the other hand, it's established. They know it's going to sell well, so they don't have to all that worry about, you know, is this project going to die like a dog or not? But it was a lot easier early on.
My question is for Mr. Alston. For your work in the Fate of the Jedi series, when you're writing the action scenes with Luke, like knowing that he's like a bit older, like no longer at like the apex of his power, are there any particular rules or constraints you have to work with when writing his action scenes?
Generally, no. I mean, a few years back when we were doing Legacy of the Force, we decided on a new catchphrase, which was 60 is the new 40. So we treated Luke as though he were a 40-year-old in excellent physical condition. Now he's, you know, like a 42, 43-year-old in excellent physical condition. When he's injured, we try to maintain the integrity of those injuries and have him cope with them. But a lot of the action in the Star Wars series, the whole universe, derives from Asian martial arts cinema. And there you will see characters who are octogenarians and masters of you know, white crane kung fu or something, moving around with incredible speed and ferocity and lethality, and that's what Luke is. At 60, he is deadly. At 80, if he's, you know, he will be alive then, we know from the comic books, he will be deadly. At 100, he will be deadly. Yes, he may slow down, but his knowledge of the martial arts, his skill with the Force, and his skill with the lightsaber will account for that. So he will always be a deadly, deadly threat when he's confronted personally in combat.
My question is for Mr. Alston and Mr. Stackpole. How did y'all learn to write such thrilling starfighter combat for the X-Wing series?
For my part, I was very lucky when I started writing the X-Wing books, because it was the 50th anniversary of World War II, or 55th anniversary, and so there were dozens of pilot bios to read. I got to talk with pilots. I got to watch lots of documentaries on how guys got together in squadrons and how they reacted. Watched documentaries again on acrobatic flying and those things. And so you do all of this studying, you get the jargon down, you get the moves down, you learn how all of this is done, then you just try and put it together. And there were points where, you know, I had the little toys and I'd be moving them around and watching, you know, moving around with my hands just to make sure I knew what was going on. Uh-huh. So it was a lot of, seriously, I mean, it was a lot of choreography and those sorts of things. And again, talking to pilots and getting their stories or reading bios.
In my case, I started with the pilots. I knew a lot of military men and women from my family and from related families, so I had a sense of the personality type and how they processed sensory data and how they processed things happening around them, the speed and the concentrations, that sort of thing. With the actual mechanics of the starfighter combat, I simply tried to filter what I was seeing in the Star Wars movie milieu through that set of perceptions that I was aware of. I was hoping I got it right, more or less right, and I got very lucky because at one of the first conventions I went to after the debut of my X-Wing novels, I had two fans come up to me, one after the other, and the first one said, I'm a military pilot and I would like to know how you got it so right. And I went, score. And the next one came up and said, well, I'm with the United States intelligence community, and what I'd like to know is how you got us so right. But it was partially luck, partially knowing the right people. My take on starfighter combat is not as technically proficient as Mike's, but what I tried to do to the great extent I could was treat their X-Wings and other starfighters as extensions of their bodies, which I know this is the case with some pilots. And so when something happens in one of those scenes, it is the character doing a snap roll, not the X-Wing. And I simply maintained that specific premise as I was writing, and nobody's ever written in to say, you really screwed up, son.
This is for everybody. If you could be one character in the expanded universe, minus like the big three, which one would you guys be? And the ones who created original characters, which original character would you be?
Are you caught your breath now?
Oh, yes. okay, we all have to answer.
Take your time, please.
Thank you. I probably would be Merg, because he's one of the few characters that I allowed to live. I killed almost everybody that I created. I should have left him alive so other people could play with him, but you know, it was all, most of it was took place sometime before anyway, and so I just figured I'd kill them all, or almost all of them, and so Merg lived through it all, so I would pick him.
Good reason for a choice. Who would I be? I would be Tenille Khan. She's my favorite. And who would I have dated? Would have been Zach.
If I said I'd be Tenille Khan, that'd be kind of weird. I created and spent an awful lot of time with Kip Duran from the time he was his little scamp and a jerk to the time he became a really big scamp and a jerk, until the time he got better, until other authors made him not get better again. So I think I'd keep Kip Duran and I'd make him stay better.
If I'm to be honest, I would say I do not want to live in the Star Wars universe. it's a really scary place, and if the fans like you, you're doomed to suffer throughout your life. That said, there have been several characters that I've identified with who are more on the ordinary side of things. Among the ones I created, there's a little-known character named Joram Kyth, who was an accountant during the Clone Wars, but a very analytical guy who had a chance to change things. Whether or not he actually did, that story's never been told, and maybe it will be someday. Or Face Loran, who managed to stay out of the line of fire a lot of the time and had a lot of skills that pertain to making life better for other people. Or even Dr. Seiya, who appeared briefly in the Legacy of the Force series, who has my taste in clothes and is a real smart guy and once again stays out of people.
Boy, it's a really tough question. I think of any of the characters that I created, I'm not sure I would want to be any of them, just because they it's really a rough life that they've got. But I would find Tycho as being the guy that would be the most interesting one, just because of the challenges that he faced and sort of coming out on the other side of that.
And his hot wife.
Well, okay, and his hot wife, right? I didn't even thought about that part. Okay, definitely Tycho.
Let's see. I think I want to be the bartender in the Mos Eisley Cantina because nobody messes with him, you know, and he doesn't have like a tragic fate, and he doesn't have to go and fight legions of enemies and be outnumbered in every single combat. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
Talon Card.
To say for them, because we have determined on Twitter that Talon Card is the most interesting man in the galaxy.
Someone once asked what kind of car he would drive, and I told him it would be a nice, you know, simple Chevy something with a Lamborghini engine.
I just want to say first that I've been able to encounter each and every single one of you on Facebook. You, I haven't met in person yet, but we're friends on Facebook. But I want to say that out of all of you guys are top-notch people. I'm just telling you, you guys are phenomenal, high character, great people to interact with.
You guys ruled it. Yeah. So, I will not disagree.
But I just wanted you guys to know that, and you know, and if any of you have not interacted with them yet, these guys are great.
Thank you. Now the criticism's
going to come. I got a question, and this is the question. Well, my brain goes sometimes, and I'm...
Someone here is using the force to block it. Knock it off. He's been attacked by a brain-eating zombie.
Yeah, the zombies
are interesting. These are not the authors you want to criticize.
Now, just... out of all the Star Wars books, now of course you've just written the one book, right. But out of all the Star Wars books that you read, and whether it's the trilogy or whatever, what was your favorite Star Wars book to write? And then because each of y'all write more books, and I'm getting more interested in y'all's out of Star Wars books. I mean, Cobra, everything that you. I mean, I've been just exploring on the web. Kevin knows I've been reading his books, you know, and stuff. Make a recommendation for everybody. What book of yours to start with, outside of the Star Wars universe?
Oh, I love that book.
Okay, well, obviously I'm flogging my new book, which is The Adventures of Captain Jack. And actually, when you think about it, except for the fact that Jack is an arrant coward, an intelligent coward, you understand, and Han Solo is incredibly brave, there's a lot of similarities between Han and Jack.
I mean, lovable rogue.
They're a lovable rogue, and they both adore their ship. They adore their ship. I mean, you know, Han's got the Millennium Falcon, and Jack has got the Black Pearl, so, you know, there's a lot of similarities. So, yes, I'm flogging this book, and I think I did a terrific job on it.
Gorgeous cover.
It has a gorgeous cover. It has a gorgeous back cover. If anybody here has a copy or wants to get a copy, I have book plates I can sign for you, free from Disney, that is this back cover. You can stick them right in the book, so you can get an autographed book without having it. So, anyway, but I very near and dear to my heart, I actually have some news to announce, which is that Rydan Publishing is bringing the Starbridge books back. And so the Starbridge books is coming back. That's my backlist. And I wrote some space adventure books the way I wanted them to be. And so that is, they're coming back as electronic books this fall. If the reception is good, there will be new ones. And so some Starbridge readers, I hope, are in here. And thank you very much.
And which of the Star Wars books that you wrote was your favorite to write?
Oh, which was my favorite to write?
Can
only three.
Yeah, I know.
There's only three.
I think of all of them, I would have to say the Hutt Gambit, because I really felt it was a challenge to write all that space battle stuff. And I did, that's the one that contained the most space battle stuff, the most tactics, the most everything like that. And I had friends to help me who actually gamed the battle and everything. And but that was a big challenge for me, because I've actually never been a pilot, and I don't know any hot pilots and stuff. I wish I did. No, I'm sorry. But anyway, I think that was the one that challenged me the most. And so that, I think, is my favorite. Besides, there was lots and lots and lots of Hutts being incredibly evil and devious, and, you know, there was even a pregnant Hutt. What can I say?
Let's see, of the young Jedi Knights, my favorite was lightsabers, because, as far as I know, nobody had ever dealt with how the lightsabers came, because, you know, the Academy was just starting, and they were being trained, and I also loved dealing with Tennelle Ka's angst after having her arm cut off. Of the junior Jedi Knights, I really enjoyed Anakin's quest and creating Tahiri and Ikrit and going into the adventures there. Oh, and of my own books, if you like young Jedi Knights or junior Jedi Knights, I would try the Crystal Doors series. Because it's a lot of fun. They're teenagers who basically hold the fate of the universe in their hands. And there's just a lot of magic and wonder and excitement involved.
Of my own stuff, I'm really, really pleased with my Saga of Seven Suns. It's a seven-volume big space opera series that, if you like Star Wars, this is a big epic like that. I did something very unusual with it. It's a seven-volume series. I announced it as a seven-volume series, and I actually finished it in seven volumes. And it was books that were supposed to come out one every year, and they actually came out one every year, and I turned them in on time. So it was kind of unusual for the science fiction genre. Actually, not for the people here. The people here on this panel really turn things in on time like they're supposed to. We're well-behaved. The Hidden Empire is the first book in that series. And of the Star Wars books, I think I would go back to the Young Jedi Knights. Lightsabers is our favorite one, because that's where Tennelle Ka loses her arm. And I remember when I was up at Skywalker Ranch pitching this to Lucasfilm, I said, I want to do this book, and you're not going to like it, but I'm going to talk you into it. Because this is kids, teenagers, building their own lightsabers and playing with them. And I said, we want to actually show that these are dangerous things. They're deadly weapons that people were playing around with, and we need to show that they're just not toys. And so there's an accident, and Tennelle Ka loses her arm. But it's not just one of these magic, okay, I lost my arm, give me a new one, and then we're going on from there after it. She refuses to get an artificial arm, and for the rest of the series, and I assume she doesn't get an arm for the rest of the books either.
She did not.
She says, this is who I am, and I'm basically still a tough bitch, so you're not going to mess with me even when I'm with only one arm. So that was tough to deal with, and Lucasfilm was really, remember, these are young adult novels, and they were really okay with that, and I think that book turned out really well. So that's my favorite.
Of the Star Wars novels I've done, I think it probably comes as a surprise to nobody that my favorite was Starfighters by Icar. Yeah. By that point, I had settled into a groove. I knew the characters. It was becoming much more easy to write. I had almost complete freedom to act, because this was a late addition to the line, the last full novel that Bantam printed before the contract went to Del Rey. And so they said, write an X-Wing novel. Hey, no problem. So it was a heck of a lot of fun. Of my original work, I think my favorite is actually one you haven't seen yet. I just recently completed, and I'm now in the editing stages on a vampire action comedy called Growing Up Dead. And I think it's some of the best work I've done, at least on an emotional level. So, you know, I hope you can look for it next year, and I hope you enjoy it.
I think for me, the Star Wars books, it would have to be Eye Jedi. I love writing in first person. I felt that needed to be done, and so that was a lot of fun. And also, Tim was writing what were at one time his last two Star Wars books, And so during the time that I was writing I, Jedi, because we were passing things back and forth between the books, we talked on the phone probably every day for a month, month and a half, just ironing out details, working things out, and so that just made it a lot of fun to be able to do that. Of books of my own, I've got a brand new fantasy series. The first book came out last November, and the second one comes out in December. It's set in an analog of colonial America for dealing with that politics, but there's guns and dragons and magic and all that cool stuff. And the first one of those is called At the Queen's Command, and the second one is Of Limited Loyalty, and like I say, that'll be out in December.
Okay, of my work outside the Star Wars oeuvre, I would suggest my series Dread Empire's Fall, which is a big-scale space opera. And the first book of those is called The Praxis, and I recommend that to you. And also, I have a sort of gonzo far future novel called Implied Spaces, which is a sort of a world in which nobody dies and there's no poverty and no war. And you would think that there would be nothing to write about, but actually, once you conquer those three, your problems get a lot more serious. And so that's what that book is about. And now, as for the favorite Star Wars book that I wrote, let me think.
Come on, Walter, there's only one.
I think it would have to be Destiny's Way. Thank you.
I'm going to cheat and say Outbound Flight and Survivor's Quest for my favorite, because Outbound Flight is a nice mixture of character development of Thrawn, exploring his backstory, the action stuff, and the whole philosophic questions of things like preemptive strikes and why aren't Jedi in command when they have the Force. So it's a nice mixture of the three of those. Survivor's Quest, which is actually kind of a duology separated by 50 years with Outbound Flight, gets me the chance to use Mara and Luke as a well-oiled machine, husband and wife working together, complementing each other's strengths and weaknesses and such. That was just a lot of fun to write. I've got several series out there listed in the notes on my Facebook page, so you could pick up a series, but I'm going to suggest one or two, a couple of standalone books, so I don't suck you into a whole series, much as I'd like to. The first would be The Icarus Hunt, if you like thriller, Alistair MacLean type science fiction. And the other, if you like contemporary urban sort of almost fantasy, would be The Green and the Gray.
This question is for anyone who wants to answer. It seems like for a while the Corellian trilogy was like the stop point, and there were a lot of books written in to fill the Star Wars story, and then suddenly the Yuuzhan Vong came, and then ever since then it's just been go, 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 go with the storyline. Is anyone thinking of going back and filling in, like there's a lot of holes like in the Yuuzhan Vong series that people could write about? Is anyone going to do that?
Well, actually, I believe that Spectre of the Past, Vision of the Future, and Survivor's Quest are all after the Corellian trilogy, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm doing some backfill between the movies and such. There's not a lot of space. There's only somebody, I've got this thing right here. Let someone else talk. I've got the time now.
You do realize that it's not actually our choice as to where we actually end up writing. We're given general guidelines, and it's where they want us to drop things in. So Bantam, when they were planning stuff, sort of knocked out this amount of time, and Tim was going to sort of start and end what was going on, and the rest of us were going to fill in the middle or around the edges. When the thing shifted from Bantam to Del Rey wanted to push beyond where Bantam had been to carve out new stuff so they could have their own books. And then they've made other decisions to go further. But these are decisions that are made usually above our pay grade.
Yeah. They also don't let you go back in time too far, because Mr. Lucas has kind of marked off some areas that he was dealing with in the earlier, the movies 1, 2, and 3, and then he's dealing with in the Clone Wars, and then he has a projected television series that I don't know anything about really, but he's basically said hands off of certain time periods. I would have loved to have, for example, write Leia's backstory, and but it was like, no, you can't go back to that time.
Yeah, just to confirm, the Hand of Thrawn duology and Survivor's Quest are the only three novels between Corellian Trilogy and the Yuuzhan Vong. There are a couple of ebook novellas as well.
Good afternoon. Thank you guys for coming out. My question's for you, Mr. Zahn, although anyone who's interested in giving their opinion on this one, I'm very interested to hear. The first major expanded universe novel I read was Legacy of the Force, Sacrifice. Yeah.
Okay.
But,
okay,
you're strange.
I'm sorry.
I didn't know what it was, in my defense. I just picked up a cool Star Wars book at the time. But little did I know that Luke got married, and that was kind of a shock at first. But I guess having the death of what I, by the end of that one book, considered to be a major character, kind of shook me up and rethought. I know probably for those who actually read the whole series beforehand, it was an even bigger deal. But it kind of got me to thinking, and I'm sure this is a question any EU fan has thought of. When it comes to the major big three, what... Luke, Han, and Leia. Anyway, what would you be interested in seeing as far as their demise? Is that a good idea in the first place? Do you think it should be written? And if so, what would be a good medium or type of story? I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
I'm not convinced you have to kill them off. They didn't have to kill off Sherlock Holmes, just retired, went out and went into beekeeping or something. I don't think you would have to kill them off. You could have them exit the scene gracefully and just let them die off camera. On the other hand, probably at least half the fans would like to see, you know, somebody go out in a heroic blaze of glory or have a, you know, moon dropped on them or something. I would not take on the book of killing off any of the three of them, because I value my life.
Well, despite Han Solo being my favorite character, I've often thought that he should be the first of the three to die, because his character is kind of fixed, and he's a young rebel, and even though he's over 60, he's still a young rebel, and there's kind of no place to take that. Okay, Luke doesn't have to die; he can ascend. Leia, I haven't thought about. Yeah.
I'm good with Tim's answer.
I have no real desire to kill any of the big three. I mean, if we're going to give them a death of any sort, it needs to be one that's true to their character and meaningful to the series and to the fans as a whole. I'm not sure that there's anything we can do there that would be meaningful to the fans as a whole. It might be better, you know, if some of you stop asking for Luke and Han to lay a novel so they can go into peaceful retirement and not be in danger in book after book after book. But that does not mean I want to kill them if they are going to be four-placed characters. So no, I don't want to.
I like Tim's answer, and I remember when I wrote Darksaber, I killed Crix Maydeen, who was from the movies. And I got, like, hundreds of letters. I was shocked that you could kill a major character from the movies. I went, he's got like three syllables in one of the three movies. The guy shows up and... But if that's the case, I'm not going near Luke or Leia.
Or Lobot. That would be terrible.
But I would like to step on Gonk one of these days.
Actually, I'm so soft-hearted that I don't like to kill characters even when I outline the book and I know the character has to be killed. So, Raynar's father was... Raynar was supposed to die in one of the Young Jedi Knights books. And once I got to know him, I couldn't kill him off, so I killed his father.
Bruce was annoying. Wow.
I got in enough trouble in just from giving Han Solo a girlfriend before Leia came along, I really don't have any desire to kill anybody. Thank you.
Hey, Han. This question is for Tim Zahn and anybody else that wants to answer. I asked Mr. Tim Zahn on his Twitter or Facebook account about if any of you wanted to volunteer for writing for BioWare's new MMORPG, Star Wars The Old Republic.
Woo!
Yeah. So take your time answering that.
I would love to do something like that, but they have to invite you. We can't really just go over there and say, hi, I'd like to write a story for you.
So you couldn't just go through LucasArts and just go...
No, they would probably say no or laugh in your face, which is saying no much louder.
Do you understand? We're professionals. We do this for money. Therefore, they come to us with offers and say, we would like you to do this, and therefore we, yeah, for money, and we evaluate it as a proposition as to whether or not we can do it, whether or not it fits into our schedules and stuff like that. Look, we all love the universe. We all enjoy it. Otherwise, working in it would be too difficult. But for us, this is actually a business. You know, I mean, you would never come to one of these things and ask a doctor, hey, you know, somebody's opened up a free clinic down the block. You know, would you like to go and do heart transplants there? You know, they might want to do that as volunteer work, but it's a business thing. That's why we don't sort of get that chance to solicit those things. Or deal with that?
Not entirely true, actually. Back when Sony had Star Wars Galaxies, I went in and interviewed to write for the Jump to Lightspeed subgame that was coming out. And they were interested, I was interested, and then I got a real sense of what kind of writing needed to be done. You write in pseudocode, you put together missions in pseudocode that their program can parse and implement into the game system. And I discovered that although I had done that exact sort of thing a few years before with the Wing Commander series for Origin, I had pretty much lost the ability to write creatively under those kind of constraints. And so I backed off, and they said they understood, and it didn't happen. But it is not necessarily, it's nowhere near the same thing to write for a game like that as it is to write for fiction.
We're always allowed to say, I'm interested in this if it's available, but they usually have ideas about who they want to write anyway.
Hi, this question is for anyone who wants to answer. Just wondering if there's any particular scene you wrote that sticks out in your mind as your favorite, or any scene that in your outlining you were really looking forward to writing that came out really well.
I would probably say the scene near the end of Choices of One, where Mara is on the girder and has to block blaster shots from below her without cutting the supports that are is holding the beam up she's walking on. So she has to keep doing turn off, turn on as she sweeps the lightsaber. I think that would be very cool to see.
I remember when we were talking about Tennelle Cobb, about how we developed her character so that she gets her arm cut off and refuses to get the replacement arm because that's not who she is. And that was her character all the way through. And then that was in Lightsabers, which was the fourth Young Jedi Knights book. And then when we got to book number 13 called Trouble on Cloud City, there's a scene where Tennelle Cobb and Jason are fighting down in the lower levels of Cloud City, and Jason gets knocked off, and he falls off of Cloud City, and Tennelle Cobb reaches out to grab him, but she doesn't have an arm, and he falls. And that still gives me chills to just picture that, because this has been through book after book that she's set up, I can do anything one arm that I couldn't do, that I could always do with two. And this one time when her best friend is falling off a Cloud City and she can't save him because she refused to get an arm. That one scene was just really gives me chills, and I remember writing it, and it really felt that it was good.
And now Jason's dead at the end.
For me, it was just an entire protracted sequence in Iron Fist, starting with Face lugging the injured Ton Fainen around. Han dying, Face having to deal with cremating and destroying his body, and subsequently the letter that was read when they were back at HQ. A very emotional sequence, and people still write me about it, and it has affected a lot of people over the years.
Makes me cry every time I read it.
With me, it was a late addition to Destiny's Way. I was well embarked on the book, and then I got a request from Shelley Shapiro, the editor, to could you knight the young Jedi Knights? Have a knighting ceremony? And I have to say I was rather pleased with how that scene turned out, especially as I had Luke speaking privately with each of the knights during the course of the ceremony, I'm sorry, I blanked on the name of the character. Leia's daughter.
Jaina.
Thank you. Okay, and Jaina, and I didn't know what he was going to tell her. And essentially the Force dictated the next few paragraphs. It was really eerie, I have to say. I said, well, okay, you are the Sword of the Jedi, and this is what this means. And then I looked at it, and I said, gosh, where did that come from? And thus was history born, I guess.
Yeah, I think for me there were two real scenes that I remember real well that had impact. One was Corrin making the lightsaber in I, Jedi, just having to go through and meld all that stuff through the Force, and that was a lot of fun to write. And it was also, it was one of those sort of scenes that you write, as Walter was just saying, sort of in a fugue state. You're not really aware of what you're doing, but bang, it's done. And I think the second one was in Dark Tide Ruin, which was the death of Elagos. When Elagos is returned. And subsequently that one sort of bleeds into that final battle with Shedao Shai and the consequences thereof. And so those are scenes that still have a lot of, as you can tell, as we're recounting the scenes we remember with emotional impact, you kind of hitch because, boom, that all just comes back, so.
I think the scene, I've been sitting here thinking about it, and at first I didn't think I had anything, but the scene that I wrote where Red Hand Squadron, I don't know if anybody's really familiar with my books or not, but where Red Hand Squadron has been assigned to hold the line against the Imperial forces to allow the people in the communications tower to beam message to the Tantive. Princess Leia's ship, what was it called? Tantive IV, that was it, okay. And where, and they did their job. They went in there and they knew it was probably, a mission they wouldn't come back from, but they said they had to have the best, and they had to have, people who were just really kind of ruthless and ready to do this. She had kind of picked up a group molded a group that was very, they were like the misfits or something, and they were very fanatical, and this made them not particularly nice people, and they had done some rotten things, but they were the group they needed to hold this line. And so at the end they were going to fight to the end, and anybody who was left alive would suicide, and they never knew whether the message went through, and she was hoping it went through, and of course we know it went through, but that actually kind of got to me a little bit, the idea that she died and they died, never knowing whether the message went through.
Let's see, which book was it? Was it The Lost Ones? That they were captured? No, I'm asking you.
I'm trying to think of which book it was in.
The Last
It was when Brakkus kidnapped the young Jedi Knights. Oh, that's the one I was thinking of. I was thinking Lost Ones, but that's not right. Okay, so it was it's 15 years ago! anyhow, I always liked the teaching scenes, and I had really enjoyed in the first book showing how they were learning how to do things with their minds, and then they were captured, and then at the kind of among the dark users of the Force, they were trying to teach them faster, and there was a scene where they were
basically locked up in a room, and they were having things thrown at them, trying to get them to use their minds to deflect and use their powers. I enjoyed writing that scene. My second favorite was a scene I actually didn't write because it was in the first book, and they were just starting to go to the Jedi Academy, and we were thinking, what would a bunch of teenagers do if they were in this learning situation? They were just learning they had powers. A Jedi food fight. So I put insert Jedi food fight here, and Kevin wrote it.
Hi, I got here late, so I hope I'm not repeating this question, but Timothy, well, actually I have two questions. Timothy, if Mara Jade ever made it to the big screen, who would you cast as her? And then my second question is for Michael and Kevin. The I, Jedi, Jedi Academy parallel stories, do you see that happening? You know, the universe that we thought was exhaustive is kind of becoming, you know, the timeline is coming to an end. Do you see that happening more at all, or in that going in that direction now as opposed to earlier on?
Well, I'll answer first. I have no idea who I would cast. And part of that is because I don't see the characters physically. I've got certain characteristics. You know, Mara has, you know, red gold hair, green eyes, dancer's figure, etc. But I see them more in terms of personality, attitude, how they will react, what they will do, what they will say in a given situation. So that is how I see Mara. Any competent actress who's got the basics and can pull off the attitude will probably do a fine job. So I really can't. It's fun to listen to other people do it, to do this casting stuff, and I can see, okay, yeah, Jeremy Irons or is Thrawn or somebody or etc. But I can't really come up with anything on my own for those.
Yeah, just, yeah. I was just in terms of I, Jedi and doing the parallel story or setting I, Jedi during the Jedi Academy. I did that because that was the only place that Corrin ever could have learned to become a Jedi. The Jedi Academy was trilogy was there, it was set up in the timeline, and fortunately Kevin, and they've been smart enough when they did the, when Jedi Academy trilogy was done, well, to leave some unnamed apprentices, to leave places that I could build things in. I mean, when there was a hard count of how many people were in a room, Corrin wasn't there. You know, and it serendipitously, it worked out very well to be able to put that stuff around it. But that wasn't done because there wasn't any space in the universe. That was done because it had to be done there, because Corrin had to be there, and so it was available.
And I think it would be a real mistake to do that more than once. I don't see there's a need for it anyplace else to do, hey, let's do this book from a different character's point of view. That's just, it would be pointless.
And it's very difficult for continuity.
Star Wars Rashomon.
Okay, but I disagree with your comment about that the timeline was getting kind of filled up. I mean, when I did Golden Age of the Sith, the comic series, that was 5,000 years before the movies. And then I did Dark Lords of the Sith, which was 4,000 years before the movies. So that's 1,000 years right there you can fill up. And then there's 4,000 years from Dark Lords and the Knights of the Old Republic time frame all the way to the movies. So they could pick 2,000 years before the movies and just create a whole different universe and write 50 more books in the middle of that. There's plenty of room. The challenge is going to be developing something that you guys care about enough to want to read. And I guess that's our job. But I think if they came up with a game that's 2,000 years before the movies and built something really interesting around it, you'd all read it and we'd have all kinds of room to tell stories.
Hi. Two questions. The first are for those who've had the privilege of working with the character, and the second one's for everybody. So the first one is Wes Jansen. How much fun do you guys have working with him and just figuring out the stuff that he's going to do? And the second question is, if you all were pilots of either faction, which starfighter would you be flying and why?
I didn't use Wes that much. I used him in the comics.
That's true.
And he was fun in the comics. I mean, he was just, you knew that and Ian Hobby were going to kind of be the comedy duo, and so they were a lot of fun to write.
Yeah, I had a hell of a lot of fun with Wes Jansen. I did take a few frames of Mike's comics as the starting point for my Wes Jansen, and then made it a little more ludicrous. I tried to keep both elements of his personality, the deadliness and the humor, and to integrate them. He was just a hoot nanny to write. And what's kind of entertaining is that Ian Liston is a big fan of the Wes Jansen that appears in the X-Wing novels. And in fact, he was on a cruise ship and somebody stole his copy of Starfighters of Aguinaldo. Not long after that, I ran into him at a convention and he complained bitterly that somebody had stolen the book about his character, which I thought was very entertaining. But yeah, it was a privilege to work with Wes because he was such a distinctive personality in the Star Wars universe, and I really loved doing it. What's part two of the question?
Super violence.
I tend to like some of the vehicles that are vehicles and okay. tools and toolkits that are the best in the most situations, and so I really would probably opt for an X-Wing because it is. Perhaps the most versatile of all the Starfighters. It is not the best in every situation. It's certainly not the best in a lot of specialized situations. But it, in terms of being the vehicle that can take the most pounding and be very effective in the most circumstances, I think it's the X-Wing.
I would opt for the Errant Venture, which some may say. you might say that's not a Starfighter. You have not seen Booster Drive.
X-Wing's good. I think the Starfighter I would like most is an intact one.
I thought the Q-Wing was pretty cool. It never got out of the production line. Okay, are we? I would go with the Chisk Claw Craft.
Alright, I think we're about done. Thank you guys so much for being here.